Okay, you're welcome back to the programme. And on Wednesday, just after 11 o'clock, we have a little item called Work. We don't do work here. We call it Wellness Wednesday. And what we are actually going to discuss now is the issue of workplace conflict and workplace bullying and any other issues in the workplace. So if you have any questions, get them into us quick, by the way. 086 60 25 000. We'll see if we can help the situation. 07491 25 000 is the number to call. Right. Sharon Morrissey is founder of Conflict Clarity and joins us now. Sharon, good morning.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I am good. Great to have you on the programme. We spend so much time at work, don't we? If we're lucky enough to have a job, we want it's tough enough as it is, but we don't want it to be any tougher than it needs be in terms of, you know, how we're treated, how we treat others.
Absolutely. I suppose like the majority, if we're whether we're working from home or it's a hybrid situation or we're in the office, we spend the majority of our time in work. So absolutely, we want it to be as, I suppose, plain sailing as possible. But, you know, the statistics that are out there at the moment and always have been really, only I think we're becoming more aware of them now, is that even though with all of this time that we spend in the office, managers on average spend 4 hours a week trying to navigate conflictual situations in the workplace, which is a significant amount of time, really, when you think about it. But then if you go to the other side of it, what does bullying and, you know, harassment and all of those things look like for individual people and the impact that it has on the workplace, on their mental health and on the relationships in the home afterwards?
OK, we might talk a little bit more about that. But just getting back to the workplace, yeah. I think sometimes what is the situation like? Are managers for those 4 hours playing whack-a-mole effectively? You know, do you think businesses, managers, CEOs pay enough attention to what's going on in the workplace? You know, rather than dealing with situations, do you think they're proactive enough generally? I mean, how can you generalise? But you would know, I presume, from your engagements.
Well, I suppose, like, it kind of starts from the ground up. And a lot of times when people are getting into management positions, there's very little done in the way of training in conflict management, you know, at that piece to begin with. But even when there is that training done, there's a lot to be thought about. You know, do you know your own conflict management style? Do you know what's going to trigger you? Do you know if somebody says something to you, how you're going to react, and if that's going to exacerbate the conflict or if it's going to, you know, calm it down? So there needs to be a lot more training, I think, put into kind of the management levels and the HR levels in terms of how to kind of, you know, manage conflict. And I keep saying that, but that's in effect what Conflict Clarity is trying to do too. And every situation is different, as you said. So it's really difficult to generalize in this. So I suppose in the 4 hours, that could be like 10 minutes trying to calm down somebody that's, you know, throwing the toys out of a pram because of a certain situation. Or it could be things like having those big, massive meetings that nobody really wants, you know, no manager really wants to have. So, you know, it depends. And plus, everybody's perception of conflict is different then as well, you know. So it can be things like, you know, somebody didn't say hello to me in the hall and they never say hello to me in the hall and therefore they don't like me, to, you know, somebody actually, you know, doing something more serious or more sinister than that.
Yeah. And so, managers don't want to be sort of just saying, right, break it up. And everything's right for a couple of days. Yeah. You really need to get, you really want to be getting to the nub of the point, don't you? Because
absolutely,
you want to avoid that happening into the future.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about the impact it has on workers in a moment, but you were touching on the impact it has on businesses, just in terms of productivity, absenteeism. I mean, it would be hard to calculate, but I imagine it's incredibly significant.
Actually, there are some statistics out there at the moment, like, and I just wrote them down because I'm terrible for remembering numbers, but that there was something like 11 million days missed last year or within the last year for people being off on absences. So, and 74% of those days were counted as sick leave due to stress in the workplace, absences. So that is a huge number, you know, when you think about it. And it costs up on $15 billion a year, you know, for businesses to try and make that money back. Like, that's phenomenal. So, but sometimes what I can't understand is when we have all of this information, but yet it looks like that there's very little being done about how to make this work. So, you know, we have the information. We know that there are special ways of, you know, that there are other ways of doing it. Yet some businesses, some companies, some employers prefer, maybe prefer isn't the word, but will allow a case go to the WRC instead of bringing it in at the very beginning, like you said, and starting to unpick what the culture, what everything is in the company, because it is a cultural piece and it generally comes, you know, like from the top down, from the bottom up, whatever way you want to look at it. Like, there's no apportioning blame here, but it is a culture in the company that needs to be looked at. You know, and that is where I would come in to look at cultures and climates.
Okay, you know, so what would your role be then, sort of compared to a HR company? Maybe HR companies generally start dealing with things when they get to the point whereby, you know, someone is threatening to leave, someone is making accusations. Your work as a in terms of workplace conflict, preventative, or maybe to spot the signs early on, or is there an overlap between what you would provide and a human resources, either external or internal?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different things, I suppose. So I'm a mediator, number one. So that usually, when conflict gets bad in a business, an external mediator would normally be brought in to see as a first step before you would go any higher, in terms of that conflict resolution process. But I always maintain that if you can get in there before that, it would stop it even getting to the point where the mediation would have to take place. Now, that's a really good question. And what is the difference between me and a HR person? Well, the HR people, of course, are after, you know, bringing all of their, bringing people on board, doing the interview processes, all of that. And they have all of the policies and procedures that they're in place and that they have to follow. But mediation is, by very definition, supposed to be neutral and impartial. Okay. So if a person is being paid, i.e. the HR manager or person in the company is being paid by the same company that I'm getting my wages from, how that can be
there's an instant distrust of that, because it sounds absolutely like you're batting for the, and who hired you and who's going to continue to hire you if I get sacked. Yeah,
and at the same time, it's, you know, if I'm the HR person, because I always feel that the HR people really are the squeezed people in the middle, that, you know, they're having to take the instructions from the managers and they're having to take all of the issues that are coming up, but there isn't really anybody there to support the HR people. So, you know, sometimes it's things like tips and tricks and, you know, even the use of language and how to, you know, de-escalate a situation as opposed to inflame it further.
And can I sort of say, if what you're talking about that is say, for instance, someone had a stressful situation in work and they're saying, this is making me really anxious. And they go into a manager and the manager says, listen, pull yourself together. It would compound it because they're not taking their concern or what they would see as an illness at this point seriously. Is that what you talk about, language? It is. You're nodding. Now, we've talked about the companies side of things, but you would know firsthand, and anyone who's been through this would know firsthand, this can have, and it's tough enough going to work, but it's really, really tough on the people involved, especially if they feel like they're on the receiving end of, you know, just bullying or bad feeling or being ghosted in the workplace or whatever it might be. How does it affect people?
It has a detrimental effect on mental health. And I suppose it depends on the length of time, you know, that it's going on. It depends on the severity of it. It depends on whether the other people in the organization, the company, are complicit in what's happening or not. You know, I would have lots of situations and, you know, I've had personal situations in the past where somebody will come and say something really disrespectful or, you know, whatever, humiliating to a staff member. And then nobody else reacts. Everybody keeps the head down, you know, kind of almost thanking the stars that it's not them that are getting, you know, that abuse. But to the point like where, you know, it can be so severe at times, you know, that it is causing significant mental health issues with the worker. The worker is taking those significant mental health issues home. So it's causing problems in the relationships at home. And, you know, there have been, there are episodes where people are, you know, actively suicidal as a result of you know, bullying issues that are happening in the workplace. So it's vital. It is vital that, you know, it's identified, because sometimes when the bullying is happening, and I say bullying, but when this behavior is happening, it is so kind of, you know, like you can't see it, but you start to believe, you know, all of these things that are being said. It's afterwards, you know, when you're taken out of that situation, you kind of go, okay, that's actually what happened, yeah. You know.
And I think you emotionally can emotionally regress too, because it has a very school feel to
and
it.
And it's so protective. You're trying to protect yourself, you know, so you're kind of going, you know, start to grow up, that sort of thing. You know, you'll be fine. You're well able to manage this. You were hired for the job. But yet you have somebody saying, this is not right, you didn't do this right, you know, all of those things. You're not good enough.
The thing too, and sorry to move it along, Sharon, because how you deal with this, it's a complex issue and there's complex solutions, and we'll let people know about a webinar that's coming up shortly and how they can contact you. But if your manager doesn't have a buy-in or doesn't get what you're cooking, right, it can be even extra frustrating for staff, and for people don't know what to do. So an example of that would be this text. I approached a problem or raised a problem with my manager with regards a timeline on a project and it not being realistic, only to receive negative feedback and a condescending tone. How do I approach this again with them? It's causing me a great deal of anxiety and stress. So they've worked up the courage, they've went back and they've been knocked back. And in fact, they've left that meeting with that manager feeling considerably worse than when they went in.
So now they're not only feeling stressed because of the job, but they're feeling like that they are not good enough either. So I suppose, look, you know, I don't know the kind of hierarchical situation.
Yeah, I get you. Is there someone else above the manager?
Exactly. Yeah. But other than that, like if this is a project and it's really, you know, the time frame is non-realistic, there's probably somebody else, or there's possibly somebody else working on the project as well. Well, then, you know, it's a little bit like safety in numbers. You take the other person with you, go, you know, to the manager and saying, look, we're going to have to sit down with this. We're going to have to look at this. And, you know, you as my manager are going to have to hear what needs to be said. And I take on board that takes a huge amount of courage and a huge amount of you know, people needing to be really, really strong in themselves, particularly at a point where they're not feeling very strong. And I understand that. And that is where knowing how you yourself manage conflict is very, very important. You know, that, yes, I feel very vulnerable when I'm in conflictual situations, and all this would probably go back to how we manage conflict in our family of origins, really. But, you know, I have something to say. And if it's a thing of actually sitting down and writing it out in points and taking it in with your, you know, and not being deviated from your script, this is what's really, really important to get across to your manager. Also sending an email, because at that point, I suppose, if you're that feeling that vulnerable in the position, putting it on email is also showing that, look, I am trying, trying to get
it. Puts it on the record, doesn't it? Yeah.
But it's more than, it's that, but it's also, look, I have taken the time to write these points out. I am being clear in what I'm saying. I need you to read, see, hear what I'm saying.
A lot of people listening might be in small companies, you know, four or five people. The owner might actually also work in the company, I presume. And this is, you're in the business of resolving a situation, but there comes a point really whereby the boss can do what the boss wants to do. And if you are unhappy, if you are stressed, that you have to make tough decisions sometimes that maybe that environment is not for
you. Isn't for you. Yeah, absolutely.
And we're reluctant to do that as well. That can be a tough decision, but sometimes it has to be made.
Yeah, absolutely. And we are reluctant to do that because of all of the external pressures, like mortgages, the kids having to go to school, the car payments needing to be made, all of those things. Absolutely, we are. You know, and I totally understand that as well. And, you know, have been in those positions myself. But at the end of the day, the way I see things now, and again, this is through learning, academic and real life learning, is that, you know, who am I most important to? You know, and I know you see these signs everywhere, like a job will replace you, you know, by the time your funeral's over, kind of thing. But that is the case. And I am certainly more important to my family than I am being in a job.
But some managers exploit that emotion and actually use it to suppress to suppress their staff. I'm a manager and I'm leading a team at work on a big project, but there are too many voices and it often leads to conflict, and I'm unsure how to handle this as the work is simply not getting done. That's the flip side.
Okay, absolutely. And, you know, again, to it, that's about this manager needing to be exceptionally clear in their role. So they are the and there's a big debate about what is a manager, what is a leader. Okay, so the manager is trying to get the job done, but you need to be able to lead your team into doing exactly what it is you need them to do. So if there's too many voices, I mean, as a manager, you're kind of asking the question, okay, what is the issue? I've heard the issue. This is the response to the issue. Now I need the work to be done, you know, and being, again, secure enough in the role to take the feedback, to think about the feedback and take it on, and to give those reasons back to the people who are making these comments. You know, this is the reason we're not taking this on board. This job has to get done. And it is, again, about how we use language to get that point across.
Okay. Sharon Morrissey is of Conflict Clarity, Enhancing Workplace Wellbeing. Supporting management and staff in resolving conflict is a webinar that's taking place this Friday from 1:15. And it's free. And
absolutely.
We'll link it here.
And it's for your listeners. And, you know, Chambers of Commerce and Kilkenny and the Donegal Business Networks and anybody. It's for anybody who, you know, and it's just learning at lunchtime. It's just a couple of tips and tricks, you know, on how it might help, or if people want to ask specific questions.
You get a lot of nodding, don't you, when you're speaking to people? Because we are quite simple, as complex as we are, and a lot of the problems are really quite familiar, aren't they? So I would say when you start giving examples or outlining scenarios, you get a lot of nodding heads in the audience.
Yeah, and I suppose it is that there is a level of us that, you know, we know what to do and we know what the answers are. But it's about, again, the security in our roles, you know, the security in the language that we use, the security of knowing the law, what we can say and what we cannot say, all of those things, you know. And just because you were a boss maybe 2 years ago, the whole thing looks completely different now. So, you know, post-COVID, we have something, again, like 68% of people who are working from home, so hybrid. The conflict is caused because they feel that they are not being included in decisions that are being made in the office. So, you know, whether that is true or whether it's a perception, there is conflict there. So all of this needs to be discussed openly. And, you know, it sounds so simple, but it is about having these open, honest conversations. And as a manager or a leader, if you're able to say to your staff, listen, I know this is really hard and I know we're tight on you know, deadlines and timeframes, but I will be here with you and I will be I'll be putting my shoulder to the wheel too to get this passed. But we're going to do this collaboratively and together. And I'm not talking about holding hands or anything, but showing, leading by example, that we're going to get this done, and that you acknowledge the difficulties. That really helps. Whereas if you have one person who's leaving the office like at 4 o'clock in the evening because they're the manager and they're going home and everybody's been left there till 8 or 9 or 10 o'clock at night, that's not going to help situations at all. Do you know? So it is a collaborative piece. And I think a lot of times we need to understand that, yeah, okay, I'm the owner of my business. But, you know, for the people who are working with me, I can't do the job that I do without them.
Yeah, indeed. Brilliant. Okay, thank you so much indeed, Sharon. I really appreciate it. Sharon Morrissey there, founder of Conflict Clarity. That webinar is on Friday. We'll link it on our website. It's free if you wish to access that. For now, as you would know, we had a couple of calls in from people who were looking for a bulb, the orange bulb on the zebra crossing in Manor, fixed. They said, hard to believe 1 year later, the light remains fixed. Remains unfixed, sorry. So we committed to try and do something about this. We got onto the council. The council worked really well with us, by the way, in terms of where they possibly can help out. Well, not help out, but when things are made when they're made aware of things, getting them sorted. So Letterkenny Road Section have been advised that this is the first report they received regarding this zebra crossing, which is fine. And they're going to follow up now and arrange for repairs to be carried out as soon as possible. So 1 year on, hopefully now that... And, you know, it seems like a little thing, but for the people in that area, it's important, and we're here for you on those types of issues. So our colleagues at the County Council have said they acknowledge now the issue. They weren't aware of it previously, and it doesn't matter if they get it fixed, do they? And they're going to look at that now. So that's good news, isn't it? I hear the lady on your show, but the bully is very crafty and usually is ahead of the posse. Yes, I know exactly what you're saying there. Hi, Greg. One example of bullying someone. My daughter went to a hen night with a good friend, or for a good friend. The bridesmaid had a group chat then looking for money off them all and worked out around €500 flights, hotel, etc. The bridesmaid was sending cheeky messages in private. Now they have a hen night at home and the bridesmaid turned the bride to be against my daughter and she's not asked to this one. Well, that's horrendous. But you know what? Your daughter is better off without them. Because if those are friends, get new friends, because they're not the type of people that you'd want around. And you know what? Maybe it's good to find out, because who's to say what they were talking about previously anyway? RTE does not show any programmes until 7 p.m, RTE2. This channel could be used on a Sunday to show Gaelic games. The people should vote with their feet and boycott the games. The GEA don't like losing money. Only for the BBC, says listener. We in Donegal would get very little TV coverage of Ulster counties playing, indeed. Another, RTE are not able to show their national games, Greg, but they're able to show hour after hour of the coronation last Saturday, a total disgrace. Both RTE and the GEA should be boycotted. A few months would do it. Yeah, if people organise, but they don't, do they? Jimmy was due to come on before 11, and thanks, Jimmy, for accepting the invite on, but unfortunately we ran out of time. But he made a very good point. There's an agreement for the rugby, so why can't it be the same for GEA? I presume you mean the agreement between RTE and Virgin Media. Good point as well. Hi, good on you, Greg, for giving that good coverage. That woman is so right. My parents are in the same situation with watching GEA games. Please keep it going. I'm at work. I'd love to come on the show otherwise, but always listen to it. And it's a great show. Thanks again. Thanks for your lovely comments. I really appreciate it. Another, the GEA Go RTE debate is overshadowing the cost of living crisis, housing crisis, in my opinion. The government must be enjoying this deflection. Well, it's not. We talk about the cost of living crisis all the time. And the thing is what's very important to one person might be somewhat different to another. And even this is connected to the cost of living crisis, because people aren't able to watch certain games because, A, maybe they can't afford to, right? So to be introducing a pay-as-you-go system or a pay-per-view system right now during a cost of living crisis, I think actually makes it, because we can't talk about serious tough stuff all the time. We can't be worrying about our mortgages or our car payments or whatever. Sometimes it's actually sitting down with a cup of tea or whatever it might be and putting your feet up and sitting with your family and talking about a game of football, because you know what? We can't talk about serious stuff all the time in our private lives. I generally switch off from a lot of the serious stuff now, and sit and watch a game of football, a perfect way to do that. But if then I'm forced to take a card out and pay for it, you know, and maybe the money's not on that card in some people's situation, it is all part of the same conversation. We'll be getting back to the other issues as well. Why don't players stand up for the supporters? It's a lot to ask. You know, it's in our gift, I think. But I take your point. Hi, I'm fuming about the GEA and older people having to pay to watch games. My elderly father had followed GEA all his life. His life revolved around going to and watching football. Now he is house bound. How's he supposed to set up GEA Go to watch the games? And most of the time the screen freezes. People need to stop paying their TV licence. Another, well, it's true what they say about the GEA. It's a grab-all association, right? And more coming in all the while. I think for most parents, and if you're not a parent, you can imagine yourself, the worst thing you can imagine is losing your child. Now, imagine if that child, your beautiful son or daughter, died in violent circumstances. Then imagine it is far away, the other side of the world, effectively. And then imagine trying to get justice so that in some way or other you could move forward. It's unimaginable, isn't it? It's very hard for us to even imagine how that might feel. But that's exactly, not exactly, sorry, I don't want to put emotions or words into Andrea Branigan's mouth or mind. But I imagine, Andrea, that's precisely what your life is like, mourning the passing of your beautiful daughter, Danielle, and then at every turn, your efforts to try and get some sort of a justice so you can move forward in one way or other is being denied to you. It must just be a living nightmare for you, Andrea.
It's very tough. It's very hard to move forward when you know you're always like trying to get. I just would like the trial to be finished. I would like some kind of answers from it. I would like a conclusion there.
What is the situation now, Andrea? At what stage is the trial of this person that has been charged with Danielle's murder?
We're on witness number 16 of 58. So we're kind of still at the start of it. But the last few times he hasn't got to court because the guards have nobody to take him to the courthouse. And one of the occasions they couldn't find him in the jail, so he didn't get to the courthouse either. So it's, but they have 2 weeks' notice to get him to the court. They don't understand why they don't put this all in place.
And I presume it's difficult for you to get answers. I know you have obviously legal representation there, but Vikat Bhagat went on trial in 2018. We're now midway bar the shouting in 2023, and there's no guards.
He
to
went
take
on
to
trial
court.
On to 2017. It started in 2017, and it's gone on since that, six
right.
years.
Okay.
Now in July.
Are you given any explanation as to the issues in getting this person firstly found, which is ridiculous, but then to court? Like, is this incompetence or is this trial being frustrated purposely?
It looks like if it's been purposely because like, they do have 2 weeks' notice. I don't understand why they haven't, you know, they haven't got it in place that there are enough guards there on that particular day to take them to the courthouse. Like, they should have that in place. Like, so they're not given no explanation. No, they're just saying they didn't have enough guards on that particular day to take them to court.
This issue was raised in the Dáil by Deputy Pádraig McLoughlin. The Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, said he was fully aware of the acute distress. And he also said the Minister for Foreign Affairs is ensuring a quick conclusion to the court case, that it remains a significant priority for the Irish and British governments. Do you feel enough is being done by, let's focus on the Irish government, to make representations to get this moving forward?
Well, both embassies went to Goa on the 6th of April this year, and they had meetings and they were promised stuff. But since that meetings were held, nothing at all has happened in court. They are trying, but I would like them to maybe even go to the court. The last time they were there was in 2017. They haven't been at the court since. I would like them to even go, just to maybe be seen and might help a wee bit.
I think if the right representations were made at the right level, that the Indian court system could be embarrassed into progressing this trial like it should be. I think that's the best option because obviously they're not taking it seriously.
No, they're not taking it serious. It's all about him and about what suits him. Like last summer, the prison guards were caught and suspended for taking cocaine into him.
How does that make you feel, Andrea?
Hurt and angry. Really angry and really hurt. That Danielle hasn't... I know she's passed away, but if her and her family and friends' rights mean nothing. So it's literally all about what makes them happy.
And what is this Vikat Bhagat person seen as? I mean, is he held in high regard there or something? I mean, guards bringing in... allegedly bringing in cocaine, he's able to go missing in a jail. It just so happens that court guards aren't available to take him to court. I mean, is this a reflection of the Indian judicial system, or is this person getting special treatment?
Well, it looks like he's getting special treatment because I wouldn't think everybody gets them kind of the rights, the same things that's happening to him.
I mean, what about your rights? What about Danielle's rights?
They're being ignored. Like, I've asked for video recording that says I could view the courthouse. I've asked both embassies, and I'm asking this since 2017, and it's been rejected by the Indian government. And in court, they said they can't do it, but they do it for him.
All right, okay. What I mean, as you mentioned, we did have diplomats talking to the relevant authorities at the start of April, Irish and British diplomats in Goa, meeting with officials on the matter. That clearly is not moving things along. What else, or just to recap, what do you believe can or should be done at this point from the Irish and British perspective, Andrea?
I think we should get it moved to the High Court and look for it to be fast-tracked. Which would mean it would be on more frequent rather than twice a month for 30 minutes. So you're setting an hour every month.
Yeah. So even if it progressed at that pace with the amount of witnesses to be called, this would run for, you know, 6 months, a year, who's to say? Even if it went ahead as scheduled.
Well, I know in Delhi there was a situation, and at the time I was promised this was happening in Dengue. The girl passed away in January and her court case was over by September.
Right, okay. Right, so if there's a will, there is a way then.
And there was a woman from Latvia that lived in Ireland that was killed in 2018 in India. And her trial finished in December last year.
Right, okay.
So that's over already.
Yeah, okay, so that just actually makes it even. What's different about you? What's different about Danielle's case?
That's what I mean. It makes it like you wonder, are you ever going to get any kind of justice? Are you even going to see justice?
I mean, you would, you know, obviously we glad's the wrong word, but at least things have progressed for those families. But that doesn't comfort the situation, the personal situation that you're in. Andrea, thanks for coming on and helping our listeners understand. Again, I'm so sorry with what you're going through. Not just you, but the rest of the family as well, that are all deeply affected by this. And it's just so difficult when you're far away. You know, any bereavement is, but particularly with everything surrounding this this awful case.
I have never seen the courthouses. I've never been to Goa, so
yeah.
No, it's hard. Like that is grand. Thank you very much, Craig.
Bye bye, Andrea. Take care of yourself. Andrea Branigan, if you're inclined to pray, keep Andrea and her family in your thoughts and prayers as they look to obtain justice in that situation. Right, we were talking about the situation as it relates to Manor, the school at Manor. A caller says, Greg, the signs are too close to the school. Drivers have to drop from 100 kilometres to 60 kilometres in a very short space. To drop 40 kilometres, that's the problem. I get you, I understand. I agree with the speed camera outside the school, but it's against the law to drop the speed limit 100 to 60 without road warnings showing 500 metres in advance. And certainly if I got a fine, I'd be appealing it. So there is a problem. As I say, I'm always open to being educated on it. And it seems from what's coming in here, there is the acceptance that the situation there is certainly not ideal. Okay, we'll make inquiries in relation to that.
Business Matters, in association with the ATU Donegal Faculty of Business. If you're a senior manager in the private sector looking to reinforce your leadership skills, ATU are offering a Level 9 Executive MBS in Leadership and Innovation. Call 91-86206 or email donald.hannigan@atu.ie.
All right, that means it's Wednesday and the Business Matters podcast from us here at Highland Radio is available for you to listen to right now. Its presenter and producer, I suppose you could say, is Kieran. And Kieran joins us now. Kieran O'Donnell, good morning to you. How are you getting on?
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good to have you in with us. Right, before we get to the nuts and bolts of the podcast, let's talk about a little bit of news. Major funding for Fort Dunree.
Yes, ongoing story, Greg. Donegal County Council has been awarded grant funding of €9.25 million for Fort Dunree, and that is under Fáilte Éireann's Capital Investment Scheme. This will be supported by €3.2 million matching funding committed by Donegal County Council. So plans for the fort, Greg, are nearing completion, and as part of the consultation process, public and users of the site are being invited to drop into Fort Henry today up till 8 o'clock this evening and give their feedback to the project team. So more details on the project and the process are available on the council's social platforms.
Yep, I think they'll be busy today because a lot of people have a lot of views on that.
It's a major investment.
It is.
You've covered it a few times on the programme as well, Greg, and it's great to see it coming to the stage it's at. So I suppose this is the last push in terms of maybe bringing people all together, knowing what's going to happen, and the sooner it's up and running, the better for Dunree and Donegal and Donegal.
Yeah, as we heard a little earlier on, and it's good to remind people of the opportunities potentially that are there, real potential for job creation in the cyber sector.
Yeah, the Northwest region could see a growth in cyber security related jobs from 2050 this year to 830, sorry, from 250 this year to 830 by 2030. And that's according to a report by Regional Skills Northwest and Cyber Ireland. And both of those partnered with Letterkenny-based IT businesses, TCS and Optum, for their input. So the report was published yesterday, Greg, and outlines the region's strengths to attract companies seeking new locations for cybersecurity services, while also highlighting improvements needed for the future of the sector.
Yeah, indeed. And as we heard, 30% currently employed of those 250 are from within the Northwest, and there is real scope for people to pursue a job in that area, it would seem. Right, Youthopia?
Yes, indeed.
Was in Raphoe.
Over 150 young people from Donegal and across the Northwest attended a recent Youthopia Future Fair at Oakfield Park in Raphoe. Youthopia is an EU-funded project led by the Assembly of Europe Regions in partnership with Donegal County Council. It aims to make sure that young people across Europe understand and are aware of EU cohesion policy and seize the opportunities it offers. So the participants took part in interactive workshops, Greg, focused on career pathways, skills for the future, innovative project design, and creating a professional LinkedIn profile and CV. All good for their personal development and career pathways.
I have been on LinkedIn now for 8 years, not one offer.
You better check it. I sent you a message there about 3 years ago.
Did you? Not one offer.
Right.
No late, no nothing.
They must know you're getting too well looked after here.
I can't say anything now or I'll get my wrist slapped by Fionnuala, but no one slipped into my DMs. Can you imagine? All right, okay. International Fund for Ireland, its latest funding allocation round announced.
Yes, three Donegal projects are set to receive AFA peace funding allocations totalling €468,000. AGD Gwydor and Waterside Theatre project will get €79,450. Rathmullen, The Way Forward, CLG and Enterprise Causeway Limited have been allocated €242,000, while Northwest Cultural Partnership and Anishon Development Partnership is getting €146,000. So this latest round of funding is aimed at supporting some of the most vulnerable communities in Northern Ireland and along the southern border. And a funding package of €4.9 million will provide support to 25 projects across the AFA's four programmes.
Significant financial injection to some of those organisations, no doubt about it. Okay, a bar has changed hands in Ballybuffet.
Yeah, Heaney's You Drop In and Ballybuffet has been bought by local hotelier Tommy Gillen. The well-known pub on Avenue Street, which went on the market, it'll be almost 3 years ago now, with an asking price of £520,000, was sold for an undisclosed sum recently. So Tommy Gillen built Villa Rose in Ballybuffet, and then he bought Jackson's Hotel in 2016. And 2 years ago, he bought Ancoast Hotel in Gwydor, and we had him on the programme just after that purchase. And the Gillen Group currently employs 300 people, and that is set to increase after this latest acquisition.
Is that the bar in the corner there?
It's across, well, it's Fun Parkers on your left-hand side, and everything, so come back a bit, and on the right-hand side before you come to the shop.
Uh-huh, okay, right.
Yeah, a very famous...
For sure, but you know, just on the top of your head, can't place it. Okay, fair play, okay. So we're still in the company of Kieran O'Donnell, and just to let you know, the Business Matters podcast is live for you right now on our website, but don't go anywhere listening to it while I'm still on air. It'll be all right for you.
We'll have to delay at the 12 o'clock.
Okay, well, geez, you're going to fight with John then. Come here, the whole idea of the podcast, though, is you can listen to it whenever you like, and we'll remind people when and where. Right, so what's on this week?
Yeah, on this week's Business Matters, Greg, I am joined by the owner of Orchard Stables at Manor Cunningham, Lisa Wallace, and the head of enterprise at Donegal's local enterprise office, Brenda Higgerty. A native of Austria, Lisa Wallace first came to Ireland on a family holiday back in 2012, and soon after, she returned to spend 6 months working as an au pair in Galway. and after studying to become a teacher in Austria, she relocated to Donegal in 2017. In January 2020, she decided to work full-time at the stables that are located next to her home. Here, Lisa talks about the best lesson she's learned in business to date.
Well, that's a hard one. I think for me, it's really just to believe in yourself and know that we can achieve anything that we want if we work hard. So when I think about myself, you know, I moved away from a completely different country into a new country and built everything up from scratch and have achieved exactly what I've always wanted in life. Maybe it took me a little bit longer and I didn't achieve it all right away, but I always believed in myself and knew that's what I really wanted, and it did come true eventually.
All right, fascinating wee story that one, Kieran.
Yeah, look, she up until 2012, she'd never been to Ireland, and I suppose 11 years later, she's here now, married, settled with a family and her own business. I suppose she made the decision on the first day of January 2020, great, to go full-time in the business, and we all know what happened 3 months after that in relation to COVID. But she learned a lot during that time. She has 10 stables next to her house at Geldena, 12 horses, and as she said in that clip, she's extremely content. She's actually achieved what she wants, and she's very happy doing what she's doing.
All right, second guest, Brenda Hegarty.
Yeah, I also spoke to Brenda Hegarty, who is the head of enterprise at Donegal's local enterprise office, about the business cost-saving clinic, and that is taking place in Letterkenny on Monday, May the 22nd. During our conversation, Greg, I asked Brenda why the Donegal local enterprise office is planning an event of this kind at this time.
The local enterprise office is here to help businesses, and specifically now with the rising pressure on businesses around inflationary pressure, rising costs, energy, even costs of labour. So there is a great drive in relation to saving costs and looking for opportunities to save costs. And we have a wide range of free supports available through the local enterprise office, so around digital, green and lean. So we thought we would package these supports into a cost-saving advice clinic. So these three supports specifically can help reduce costs, improve productivity and increase the competitiveness of the business. And in so doing, by accessing them, they're actually free. So a lot of them are expert advice. So that's why we wanted to present the opportunity to local businesses on what supports are available through the local enterprise office, that they don't have to invest any money themselves. They can access them free.
Yeah, well worth engaging, Kieran, I think.
Yeah, I suppose the local enterprise office, no more than businesses, they have changed the way that they do things and they approach things as well. They're on the ground, they've got their finger on the pulse. So this is in response to the needs that are out there for businesses. One thing that struck me when I was talking to Brenda, they have 20 different partners that are involved in the sort of multi-agency approach that is around the Donegal, and they all work very, very well together. One of the other things that she talked about was demystifying the fear factor in the world of digital, and I suppose simplifying the process and maybe how to manage data to drive sales and improve production for businesses, which ultimately is the aim. But that event is coming up later in the month in Letterkenny, and will be well worth coming along. And I suppose the other point that Brenda made was maybe for businesses and business owners maybe to take a wee bit of time away from the business doing it again to maybe focus on how they run the business.
All right, the great thing about podcasts is you're often not constrained by time. So you can hear the full interviews with Lisa Wallace and Brenda Hegarty. They're available now to download, to stream, I should say, firstly on highlandradio.com. You can also download it to listen at your leisure, or you can get it on Spotify or iTunes. And for people who just like to listen to scheduled radio, it's on air when? On Sunday?
Yeah, on Sunday evening, Greg, after the 6 o'clock news.
And if someone wants to get in touch with the programme, email the best way, Kieran?
Yeah, please, businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
So that's for any feedback, any press releases, any kind of suggestions, or anything really.
Yeah, any leads, any contacts will be all gratefully received.
Okay. What episode are you on now?
144.
Right, right. Very, very impressive. Okay. Brilliant stuff, Kieran. And by the way, those, I say it and I'll say it again, those podcasts remain there for you to listen at your leisure. There's an awful lot of contact there and getting the views and opinions and experiences of some of the best business brains right across the Northwest. You'd agree with that, Kieran?
100%. There's a great story in everybody.
Yeah. All right. Great stuff. Kieran O'Donnell, presenter of the Business Matters podcast from us here at Highland Radio. Thank you very much indeed. Kieran, we'll be back with you on this programme next Wednesday. I just want to mention that A Parent's Right are holding an information evening this evening. It's at 7 p.m. on the RSE programme. It's upstairs at Backstage in Letterkenny. Everybody is welcome. So I said I'd give that a mention, and there you are. This caller says, I was in Letterkenny Hospital yesterday in Scally Place when leaving. I was searching for the way out. I walked down a corridor and came to a door with no exit posted on it. I turned around and walked to the other end of the corridor without seeing any exit door. I eventually met a worker who directed me back to the door with no exit on it. You actually go through that door and the exit door is just inside. Who's responsible for this confusing and nonsensical signage? That would be no good for me because I have a bad sense of direction outside. But see, trying to find a hotel room or something or trying to get out of a building. I was, and this is no joke, when we were over in Brussels doing the show, it took me, and I wasn't able to admit it to anyone for fear of being slagged at the time, it took me 3/4 of an hour to get out of the building. I could not find my way out, and I didn't have the, I don't know why, I didn't want to ask anyone. I did ask one person and then got lost again, so after that I gave in. Greg, 24 people landed on the moon, says Aaron in Buncrana, but people only talk about the first. Right, I take your point, but... there are many people out there that have their doubts and maybe my critical mind. I'm not saying I'm one of them, but I don't know. All right then, folks. See you tomorrow morning at 9. Thanks to Caroline Orr, who researched and produced, and Niamh, who works on the show too.